And welcome back to another episode of Every Horror Movie on Netflix, the podcast where we watch, review, and discuss every horror movie on Netflix. I am one of your hosts, Allison with an I, along with Allison with a Y.
Patrick. Where's Patrick? Are you there?
Allison with a Y. Allison with a Y.
Patrick, where are you?
Allison with an I. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. I can't find you, for fuck's sake.
Allison with an I, you keep moving around.
There's too much tall grass.
If that didn't give it away, because why would it? This week, we are reviewing In the Tall Grass.
We're the dumbest people.
Truly.
We are reviewing how nerdy we can possibly get.
I should say I'm the dumbest person because that was my dumb idea. So sorry to everyone.
We loved it. A little bit about the movie. In the Tall Grass is an adaptation of a Stephen King and Joe Hill novella about the unsettling events that happen to a handful of people when they wander into a giant field of, well, tall grass. We first meet Becky and Cal, a brother and sister who stop next to the field while traveling through the countryside. Becky, who's pregnant, is planning to give up her baby to a family in San Francisco. But while they're stopped, they hear a young boy named Tobin, fucking Tobin, calling for help somewhere in the field so they can go in to rescue him. They quickly become lost along with Tobin in what seems like an endless grass plagued by supernatural happenings. They then discover Tobin's dad, Ross, played by Patrick Wilson, and his mom, Natalie, are also stuck in the field. And eventually, Becky's fuck-up baby daddy, Travis, wades into the field as well in search of Becky. Together, the lost six people try to figure out the secret of the grass and find their way out of the field. Fun fact about this, this was originally published in Esquire magazine in 2012.
Oh.
As the novella that it was.
Interesting. So, Allison with an I, you've read this. Is it a little slim, quick read?
You know, I read everything online, which I feel I feel like such a poser saying that. Like, but I feel like the next poser-ish thing is audiobooks, which are not poser things. I don't listen to audiobooks, but I'm like, you know what? I need to like dismantle all of that thinking that I'm doing because reading is reading is reading. I've seen paper copies of it also online, never have held one. And yeah, it's a little thin copy from a larger book called Full Throttle, which is a collection of short stories. So I think this is the only short story that I've read from Full Throttle. Have you or why read anything from that?
No.
No, I haven't read that one. So tell us about your thoughts on the story, because like that's the whole reason that you picked this. How did you respond to the book, the novella?
So, okay, to back it up, the reason that I picked this movie is because I saw this movie when it came out on Netflix. So what year was that? Do we have a
2019?
Year? 2019. I think I saw it right when it came out and I was like, ooh, this looks good. Based on a book by Stephen King, watched the movie. Did not care for it at all. Like, had some pretty strong feelings about it. It was like, this absolutely sucked. Mm-hmm. And then fast forward to 2020. It was either the end of 24 or beginning of 25 that I read the novella. And I really preferred it. I really liked it. And I was like, oh, yeah, I remember watching this movie and feeling like it totally sucked. Let me read I did it backwards, right? Like, usually, I mean, there's no right way to do it. But I like to read the book, then treat myself to the movie or show or whatever it is. I like the book a lot better than I like the movie, but I could not remember anything about the movie. Mm-hmm. So I suggested that we watch this selfishly so that I could revisit the movie after having just read the novella, after having seen the movie a long time ago.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm kind of glad you did because I had been curious about it since it came out. Just, I mean, you know, Stephen King and As longtime listeners know, I'm a big Patrick Wilson fan. You know, Patrick Wilson is daddy. And the concept was just bizarre and fascinating. I was very curious about it when it came out, but I still hadn't seen it. So I was glad to have an opportunity to check it out.
Yeah, I had seen it back also when it first came out. And I didn't remember much about it. I remembered Patrick Wilson's character, and that was probably in the premise, of course, but that was really about it. And yeah. And I also remember at the time when I first watched it, I was like, it's nothing to write home about, you know.
Yeah. You know, Patrick, you and I have talked about how we don't have great memories.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like I was watching it for the first time when I rewatched it for the podcast. I was like, I don't remember any of it.
Same. Yeah. Like, there were some things that I was like, oh, yeah, I guess I do remember that, but I would have never been able to tell you, like, prior to rewatching it about it.
Yeah, I think I remembered the big spoiler that we'll obviously not talk about until we get to the spoiler room, but only because it was deeply traumatic. But beyond that, I was like, I couldn't tell you anything about this movie. It was pretty faithful to the novella, I will say. There was one important character swapped out for another, and the ending was just a tiny bit different. So we can get into that, like the meat and potatoes of that later, but it was pretty faithful in a way that was nice, you know?
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, I'm curious to hear if this faithful adaptation, if it sat better or worse with you the second time, but maybe we should hang on to that until we do our reviews. Keep everybody, keep Allison with a Y and I in suspense and the listeners as well.
I love it.
This premise though, I actually said to Allison with a Y right around the beginning, I was like, leave it to Stephen King to be like, what if grass was scary?
And I was like, this feels very, this almost feels like something M. Night Shyamalan would also think of.
Ooh,
yes. Good call. Yeah. I especially just because it's so high concept as it goes along. Like, obviously, again, we're not going to spoil exactly what's going on here in the grass, but there are some surreal and sort of supernatural things going on. And the explanation, or sort of lack thereof at times, is definitely Shyamalan-esque. The degree to which people repeat their names over and over again is Shyamalan-esque. That's why we were all yelling each other's names at the beginning of the podcast.
Yeah.
I've never heard the name Becky said so many times in my entire... I don't think, like, however many times the name Becky is said in this movie, I don't think in my life prior, cumulatively, I had heard the name Becky spoken so many times.
Well, I think the good news is that we remember at least most of the characters' names as a result, which feels like a rare occurrence on this podcast.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah.
Seriously. They are reinforced over and over again.
Leave it to Stephen King to make grass scary, but I will say that the idea of being lost in a forest, in a field, is one of my great fucking fears. Because
That scares me too.
Terrifying. I have a terrible sense of direction. I don't trust myself to, like, I have heard how to make a sundial and a fucking compass enough times that I should know. I have not retained any of that information. I would be fucked. It's a terrifying premise to me.
I don't know if we've already talked about this, but when I see stuff like this, I think about that real case of that woman who stepped off the trail. She was like on, I think, the Appalachian Trail. And she stepped off the trail to go pee. She got disoriented and she never found her way back to the trail and died in the forest. And she wasn't, all things considered, when they finally found her, she wasn't that far from the trail.
I remember that story.
Scares the shit out of me.
100%.
That happening.
I think we need to create a recurring segment because this has happened multiple episodes now where like Allison with a Y connects the movie to a real life like true crime or murder story.
I feel like I've done that a couple times
You have. Absolutely have.
Yeah. The Allisons then.
We're true crime peeps for sure.
Yeah, we are.
But yeah, no, I relate to that fear. I mean, like, honestly, that terror of getting lost in, you know, a natural environment where there's no man-made markers to go by. Mm-hmm. Certainly, you know, I've had moments where I mean, honestly, basically what you just talked about, I've had moments where I'm on like a long hike and I step off, you know, just a little bit off the side of the trail to relieve myself so that I'm not doing it on the trail. And then I'm like, shit, what if I don't make it back? It's just trees everywhere. And there's just like a dirt path that could be obscured by many of my surroundings. It's scary.
Yeah.
This is why I don't hike. This is why I stay inside, guys.
Well, and like, so I work as a nanny and I like to take the kids that I've cared for, like, you know, on nature trails and stuff like that. And I will say every time I'm like, make sure you always stay on the trail. Never go off the trail. Always stay on the trail. It's so important so that you know where you are. When you go off the trail, you can get lost. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, these are like, you know, 3 and 4 year olds, but I like, and maybe I'm giving them a phobia, but I think it's a safe phobia to have.
Yeah. Yeah. You're preparing them. I think that's super on point. Like, I wasn't from a big hiking family, but nobody told me shit like that when I was growing up. Right. You know, we're like,
yeah. Same.
We're doing so much better by these kids.
Yes, exactly.
The unique wrinkle with this movie is that it's grass. Have y'all ever seen grass this tall in real life? I haven't.
No.
Okay.
Yeah. I've seen like fields, right? Like cornfields.
Yeah.
I've never seen it where it goes like a good 2, 3, 4 feet over a human's head, though, you know?
Yeah, never grass, just like corn stalks, which are scary too.
Yeah.
Wait, fun fact, cornfield related, not grass related, but when I was like, 7.5 months pregnant with my daughter, who's now 16 and a half, and we took her dad and myself and his then 2-year-old daughter to a corn maze, fun fall festive activity. My daughter was born in October, so it had to be like early September. And we got fucking lost in the cornfield, in the corn maze. And it was one of those fall days that was like 80 degrees.
Oh, no.
And I didn't have any water with me and didn't think we were going to be stuck in there for like 2 hours. So I am overheating. I am dying of thirst. And we are fully stuck in a corn maze. And he had to like my daughter's dad had to like beat down the corn to get us out. But it was like a very fucking panic moment where I was like, I'm going to give birth in this fucking cornfield.
Oh, no.
So I do have to say, I empathized with Becky a little bit, just like, I know what that feels like.
You've lived it.
I lived it.
That's a little too close to home.
Totally.
I was impressed by the just kind of the visual of the grass. As we mentioned at the end of last episode, this movie is directed by Vincenzo Natale. He directed several episodes of the TV series Hannibal, which we're big stands of on this show, or at least Allison with a Y and I are. He directed the movie Splice, which is solid. We've reviewed that on the show before, too. And I want to say a couple other noteworthy things, but very interesting director. His movies are always very visually striking. And I want to say that he does just about the most and the best that you could do with this field of grass. You know, you see it from so many different angles, and there are moments where it pulses and moves in interesting ways. Yeah, it's strangely visually compelling for a movie that literally just takes place almost entirely in this giant field of grass.
Yeah.
It's hard for me to imagine anybody really doing it better.
Yeah.
Working with the material. You know, the material itself, different story for me at least.
Yeah.
Again, without getting into the specifics of exactly what's going on in this field, it was a little lacking for me. I still didn't know quite what to make of it in the end. There are certain revelations, but they weren't enough for me. Mm. And I don't know. I felt kind of checked out and overwhelmed to a certain degree. It was both too much and not enough. There was a lot going on. And then the actual explanation for what was going on, or even like a theme that would work as a reason for this to be happening, was not there for me. And that's about the most I can say about it before we explain in a little bit what the hell is actually going on.
I can understand that, because there were definitely some major things that were presented, particularly later on in the movie, that I was like, I want to know more about this. And there's just some things that we never find more out about them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm like, I thought it was very interesting, and I understand like it comes from a novella, so it's not like the novella is going to take time to go super in depth into the lore or whatever, but I wanted to know the lore, because I'm like, this is interesting.
Yeah. Mm.
You know, like this could be really fascinating. I understand that it's like, it's beholden to the material that it comes from. So I can give the movie itself that grace, but watching like this story unfold, it's like, no, that's what I want to know more about.
Yeah. Well, and especially when you mentioned the lore, there is a dilapidated old church right across the road from this field that appears very ominously many times. There is a bit of action that winds up taking place in it. And there's also a rock, a giant boulder in the middle of the field that also plays pretty significantly into the plot. The rock is covered in all these etchings. I think it is supposed to be implying like some kind of indigenous, like tribal engravings for some reason. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff in here that kind of nods in the direction of maybe themes about faith or religion or something. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't really come together. And that was very frustrating for me.
Yeah, same.
It's just there. It's never really explained. No theme or idea is really articulated around it. This church and also this rock are just kind of set dressing, practically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the first time I watched the movie in 2019, I wasn't a Redditor. I didn't do like, let me run to Reddit and read think pieces on this. So I just took the material on its face. And I think that's part of sort of like what you said, what frustrated me was like, I have so many questions that are just not answered. There's a lot here, but there's also nothing here. Like there's a lot of mm-hmm. nothing burgers here. Mm-hmm. So then after I read the book, let's say 2025, ran to Reddit, learned a lot more about it, and then felt a little more equipped going into the movie. But man, the stuff that the Redditors have figured out, it's like so much mental gymnastics that it's like brilliant, because we have brilliant people on Reddit that are critiquing and hypothesizing and all of those good things. But it's like, that's the author's job.
Right. I was thinking, I'm like, I feel like if I spent enough brain power analyzing it, I could come up with a conclusion on my own, because I can see the threads. I can see the threads there of a thesis about what this is all trying to say.
Yeah.
But I agree. It's up to the author to make it a little more clear.
Yeah.
And it just isn't.
Like the Redditors wrote a great story.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But that wasn't. Yeah. That was the Redditors. You know?
Right. Yep.
So am I hearing correctly then that there's not really, this isn't much more fleshed out in the book either?
No.
Okay. All right. Interesting.
Correct.
Interesting.
And maybe, interesting. I don't know, you know, like I would love to hear from Stephen King and Joe Hill. Like, was their intention to choose your own adventure? Was it to make of it? Was it interpretive? Was it, and I can't, honestly, I think the answer is just going to be no. I think it was just kind of a flop. And I think I can swallow that, because as a Stephen King lover for my entire life, some of the endings of his books suck. Some of the stories suck.
Yeah.
You know, Joe Hill is Stephen King's son. For those of you that don't know, you know, he's not a perfect writer. So like, it's totally fair to say maybe this just sucked. The book, you know, the source material.
Yeah, I mean, when you write at the rate that Stephen King does,
100%.
They can't all be hits.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
That's true. Another kind of like a thing that was a bit, that kind of drove me a little crazy about this was all these other cars outside of the church. And I am like, what happened to all of these people? I mean, I think it's slightly, I guess, it maybe does draw a bit of a conclusion about that. But it, once again, it's so wrapped up in the lore that's unclear that, you know, I'm kind of like, I want to know more.
You're writing the story for them.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like I'm having to draw my own conclusions, which I don't hate. You know, I do like stories that kind of can be a little open-ended, but I feel like something like this that sets up this like, potential for really rich lore sets up these things. I don't want to have to draw the conclusions.
Right.
Like I want to hear the creativity behind, like, why did you think of this? Like, what did you think this was? You know, what was the point of creating this sort of, you know, potentially kind of like rich, kind of like historic landscape, I guess, you know, when you're really thinking about lore, what was the thought process behind it? I wanted more.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I love ambiguity. I'm all about ambiguity. Mm-hmm. Some of my favorite movies have very ambiguous endings. I've written stories that have very ambiguous endings, but you do that with intention, and it just doesn't feel like there's a lot of intention behind the ambiguity with this one.
Yeah, exactly.
I agree.
that, I mean, I bitched a lot. So let me, what do they do? What do they say? Like roses and thorns.
Roses and thorns.
So here's a rose. Is Daddy Patrick Wilson is fucking great in this. I love my my favorite version of Patrick Wilson is when he's just being full on crazy evil. And this is a great entry in that subgenre of his work. We all know that I'm a big fan of Insidious Chapter 2, in which he goes absolutely batshit. It's not quite that level of batshit, but he's pretty batshit in this.
Oh, yeah.
He seems like a good guy, question mark, when he first shows up. Maybe a little creepy, but it does not take long for it to turn out that he is batshit.
Yeah, yeah. What did I say about Patrick Wilson last time?
Oh, didn't you say like the best mediocre actor?
Yeah, he's he's like this generation's greatest mediocre actor.
Yeah,
Andy, this is our second movie we've reviewed with Patrick Wilson. The first being Bone Tomahawk.
Oh, oh yeah. Shit!
Yeah.
Oh, I mean,
we're running out of shit, you guys.
I'm just might kidding. As well be the Amon mascot.
Oh. Yeah.
God Patrick bless. Wilson Award. That's what we're giving out this year.
Yeah. When I say like greatest mediocre actor, I do enjoy Patrick Wilson. Don't get me wrong.
I hope that Patrick Wilson has like a great late career, like best actor, at least nominated role in him. I don't know that I've ever seen anything from him that I would consider like a great performance, but he's pretty much always entertaining. Yeah. He's got that intense look. He's got the eyebrow, you know, and I would say he's a talented guy, insanely talented, but he's always entertaining to watch.
I don't think he's ever been given a lot of meat to chew on in his roles, you know.
He's in a ton of horror movies, so that alone, he's pigeonholed, right?
Right, like, and then
but he's also the fucking Phantom of the Opera.
Well, he's Raoul in Phantom of the Opera, which is, he's like a baby in that.
Well, and he's a theater guy. Like, he can sing.
He can? Well, I guess if he was in Phantom of the Opera, he can.
Yeah. I don't know. Interesting man. I'm always excited to see him. He has a bit of an everyman quality, too. You know, he's got the little bit receding hairline. I don't know. He's just an interesting character. Mm-hmm. I always enjoy seeing him. He always does the job. He always does what's required of him.
Also, like, and this doesn't really, this says nothing about his performance, but because he had like this little mustache in it, I kept being like, he kind of looks a little bit like Chris Pratt at times, which was so weird. Like almost like a mix between Will Arnett and Chris Pratt in my brain.
Interesting.
Was like freaking out.
I could see Will Arnett. I could see Will Arnett for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, it was weird because, like, you mentioned that about him looking like Chris Pratt. In the very next shot of him, I was like, oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was only certain angles.
Yeah.
But when they, like, happened, it was really weird.
Yeah. And because the first shot after you mentioned that was one of those angles. Yeah. And I was like, Crisp Rat? What are you doing here?
Crisp Rat.
I love calling him Crisp Rat.
You know, Chris Pratt.
I think one of our fans actually introduced me to that nomenclature.
Like, Brat with a B, like...
No, crisp, like crispy chips, and then rat, like crisp a rodent. Crisp rat.
He is a fucking rat. Man, he went so far downhill after Parks and Rec. Fuck that guy.
Oh, so far fuck downhill. That guy.
He's like...
That is not the Andy Dwyer that we know and love.
Exactly.
He's so talented. I mean, he has talent. He just doesn't use it anymore. He takes on just lazy roles. He's just a boring, bland... of all things, fucking action hero now. But Crisp Rat is not in this movie.
We're spending way too much time on that guy.
Fuck him.
Fuck that guy. He's a trumper.
Fuck Crisp Rat.
Allison with an eye, how do you feel about Patrick Wilson?
Oh, Patrick Wilson is daddy, for sure.
Okay.
I was going to say, like, I joked earlier, like, we're running out of material, but then I was like, no, we're definitely going to see more of Patrick Wilson because we only watch horror movies, and, like, inherently, he's going to be in a lot more horror movies that we talk about and review and watch.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I'm not sad about it. I'm not sad about it.
No. God bless him.
Yeah. Patrick Wilson can do no wrong in my eyes. Like you said, Patrick, he gets the job done. I think he plays...
He's the giver.
He's the giver.
Like the Chapel Roan song, he gets the job done.
He does get the job done.
I haven't seen him go super psycho until this role, and he did a good job. He was creepy. He creeped me out. He kind of creeped me out from the beginning, but I'm always just like a little leery of men.
Fair. Yeah, he did. He was good at like establishing some pretty solid ick vibes from the beginning. So, which I think, you know, that's pretty decent acting right there, to doing nothing that raises red flags, but also just having that vibe while still trying to be ostensibly a nice guy.
Well, and it helps that he's got that Stephen King, like, boomer ass, like, you know, my name's Ross, wife's Natalie, my gig is sales, you know, just talking in this very shticky, boomery kind of way that is just the way a lot of Stephen King characters talk. But in this particular case, it definitely contributed to him just seeming off from square one.
And I think when he's introducing himself, he introduces himself, like he gives the context of like why he's there, why his family's there. But I think he calls himself Tobin's daddy. And I was like,
yes, same.
Yucky.
I didn't like that.
Well, how much more can we talk about without getting into the spoilers?
I don't think much. I would like to hear from you, though, Allison, with an eye, like, why the book hit with you so well and, you know, why the movie, it sounds like, still didn't really do it for you, even on the second viewing.
I think without giving away my review, I wouldn't say that the book hit with me so well. I will say that I preferred it to the movie.
Okay.
Okay.
You know, I am, like, a huge Stephen King fan. Joe Hill lover, like some of the first horror that I read at age like 12, 13 was Stephen King. So I just always have a soft spot for his writing. Like he's my comfort writer, you know, like I'm
same, honestly.
Yeah. I'm so used to the way he writes. Joe Hill writes really similarly. I feel like I'm having a conversation with a friend, you know? So, it's hard to get that vibe from a movie, no matter how closely related it is. So that being said, even reading it on its face, I enjoyed it, you know? Mm-hmm. I didn't feel the need as much to go like, wait a minute, that doesn't make perfect sense. And there's confusion and there's repetition and I need to wrap my head around that to like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I didn't do that as much with the book as I did the movie. I don't know why. Yeah. Maybe it's like, it's a psychology thing, maybe.
So how would you rate the movie? View it, cue it, or screw it?
Screw the movie, cue the book.
Okay.
Yeah, I can't even elaborate on why. I just think, you know, if you're going to watch the movie by itself without any interest in reading the book, I would say it's a screw it for me. If you put the book in your queue and read it and then want to watch the movie that's based on it, cue the movie too, right? But if you're only going to do one, read the book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What about you, Y? View it, cue it, or screw it?
So I think I liked it more the second time around. I don't think I liked it enough to say it's a view it, but there were enough things about it that I found interesting and, you know, had me thinking that I think I have to give it a cue it. You know, I think it is a really interesting premise. Like I said, I find the setup of the lore really interesting and really intriguing. And it instilled kind of enough feelings of dread in me that I'm like, yeah, I think this is something that if you, you know, want to throw it on your queue and if you're just like hanging out and you're looking for something to watch, it's not a bad one to put on. Don't expect to get a ton out of it, but it might, you know, have you thinking about what may be in fields of tall grass as you pass them. It will definitely, I think, make you look at those a little differently. Patrick, what do you think? What do you feel?
Yeah, I'm going to jump on the screw it train. There are obviously elements of this that I enjoyed. As I said, I think Natalie directs it about as well as you possibly could. Patrick Wilson, daddy, is daddying in the most evil way possible. But it's just messy. And those two things that I did enjoy aren't really enough for me to recommend it to anyone other than somebody who's into, I guess, like Vincenzo Natale and watching your way through his filmography or whatever, but you're already going to watch it anyways if that's what you're doing. It was just It was messy and not satisfying to me in the end.
I agree.
So we're going to satisfy you, the listener, with the spoilers. Well, not like that. We're just going to tell you what the hell is going on in the tall grass in the spoiler room.
We're going to try.
Spoiler church.
Just a minute. Yeah, we're going to try and explain that.
In the spoiler church, yeah.
The spoiler church.
The spoiler church, yeah.
I was going to say spoiler field, but we might as well go to the church because nobody else fucking really does.
Yeah, seriously. But before we go and pay our respects to the spoiler god, I will encourage you, as always, to visit our website, everyhorrormovieonnetflix.com. We have every episode that we've ever done there, which is now approaching 200. We are about to get to our 200th episode.
Wow.
We would also love for you to connect with us on social media, and our social media maven Allison with a Y will tell you all about that.
Yeah, you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Blue Sky, YouTube at Amoncast, Ehmoncast, Cast. You can also find us on our TikTok, which is Amon Podcast, Ehmon Podcast. We also have a Discord that you can join and join in on the conversations. The link to that is in the show notes.
And the other thing we always love to tell you to do is go leave us a review on your podcast provider of choice. It helps people find the show, and it helps us know if we're doing our goddamn jobs.
Only good reviews.
Only good reviews. Only good reviews. Yeah. I like how I just said we need to know if we're doing our goddamn jobs, and then we're like, only good reviews, though. So, yeah.
We don't actually want to know.
Yeah, we don't. If we're doing terribly, we actually don't want to know about it.
And piss off.
Let us live in ignorance.
So we'll see you in the spoiler church, y'all, for all the spoilers on In the Tall Grass. We'll be back. Welcome back to Every Horror Movie on Netflix. We are in the spoiler church, where we're going to discuss the spoilers for In the Tall Grass. And we got some shit to unpack in here, guys.
Allison with an I? Is that you?
It's Patrick? Me, Allison with an I. I'm here.
Patrick, I hear you.
Can you hear me?
Guys, I'm over here. Stop moving.
Where are you, I?
I'm gonna jump up and see if you guys can see me.
Stay
right?
Where you are. I'll come find you.
Okay, the spoiler church, I want to throw in a note about just this church in the movie, because this was one of my favorite things in the movie, the stained glass windows that are just
beautiful.
They look like blades of grass.
So this is something I wanted to talk about. We might as well do it now. There's a lot of, apparently, Stephen King callbacks in this film. One of them being the Church of, is it Christ the Redeemer, or is it Black Rock the Redeemer?
It's called the Black Rock of the Redeemer, which is in reference to the rock itself that is in the movie.
Right.
So I think that that was in reference to some stuff in the Dark Tower series, which I have not read. So I can't speak to that. But there are nerds bigger than me. Of course there are. On Reddit, that several of them said, oh, that's a callback to, like, the church itself, in the name of the church, is a callback to some stuff in the Dark Tower. Patrick, have you read that? Can you confirm or deny?
I've only read the first book, and I don't recall anything in that book that would align with that. But there's, you know, 9 books, I think, in the series.
Yeah, it's a big one.
And they're, you know, they're all 600 pages long, of course, because it's Stephen King.
Yeah, of course. Somebody asked on Reddit, which I thought was really interesting, does anyone else think that the Black Rock is what brought it to Earth?
Oh.
Like it?
Yes, it. Like Pennywise it.
Oh, like they're part of the same universe?
Yes.
Oh, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised.
So I like Pennywise love that idea.
Ancient, so that would make sense.
So once again, right, like we referenced earlier on the podcast, like we're writing a better story here.
I love that. Yeah, so this rock that the name references is well, I mean, we already talked a little bit about it, but there's some powers involved.
Is it a meteorite?
It doesn't say. It doesn't specify.
Yeah. Hard to tell.
But it is like this. Yeah, when you touch it, they say, like, you know things. If you touch the rock, you know things.
Yeah.
Including, yeah, like, how to get out of the field.
Including how to get out of the field.
Yeah.
Which initially everybody that goes into the field wants to know until they touch the rock.
Well, only, I think, three characters have touched the rock.
Right. Tobin. Daddy Wilson.
Uh-huh.
And
then
Cal does name? Her brother?
Hal.
Cal.
No, Cal doesn't.
Oh.
It's the baby daddy who
Travis.
Right. Okay, right.
Yeah. And it's interesting because, I mean, two of the characters effectively get corrupted by it, but Tobin has touched it and he doesn't that we know of.
It's because he's a child. He's pure.
I think it actually might be that.
Yeah.
Because they say, like, at one point, Patrick Wilson, and I think this is, like, setting up some of the lore behind it and some of the purpose and I wanted to further explore. Patrick Wilson's, like, touch it, you know, all it wants you to do is, like, work through, like, basically, like, work through your problems, work through your shit. The rock wants to help you. I think all the rock did was, you know, fully bring out his evil side.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Well, yeah, I mean, it's so hard to tell what the hell is going on here. I mean, one thing that is clear is there's a time loop. Becky dies very early on.
Mm-hmm.
And
you're like, well, shit, she's dead, okay.
And then it almost immediately resets, and we see her and Cal come to the field for the first time again. So there's a lot of, and this is what I was trying to get at before when I was saying how frustrating this was to me, because so many people die, and it just held zero weight for me because they came right back. I want to say some of them even die multiple times.
Yeah. Well, I think at one point we see like five of Cal's corpses all laying in a row.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's never explained. It's not explained or laid out. Like, I'm stupid. Lay it out for me.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, or again, have something thematically where there's an explanation for that to be happening. I don't always necessarily need a practical, like concrete, logical, real world explanation. But if it seemed like this was doing anything thematically with that, it would work for me more, and it just doesn't.
I mean, and like I guess, you know, if you think of the name of the church, the Black Rock of the Redeemer, right? That is kind of like the purpose of the time loop is to redeem your actions from the previous time loops, to learn from the past, to redeem yourself and give yourself another chance. But I don't know. It's like, and I think by the end, like, you know, Becky is really the only one who seems to have gotten anything out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cal is still like kind of a piece of shit a little bit. And Tobin's just traumatized.
Yeah.
Yeah, poor Tobin. Yeah. Poor fucking
God,
Tobin.
Poor Tobin. I actually quite liked Tobin. I mean, he was a very creepy kid when he first showed up, but I ended up like genuinely caring about that character.
Same.
It was a decent child performance.
Same, but it was not totally explained why he was creepy at first and then he wasn't. Like, we have to really piece that together, because at first his presence
weird.
Is really ominous and he seems to have really dark ulterior motives for these, you know, vulnerable characters, one of whom is a pregnant woman who, like, you know, I'm sure we all empathized with her. And then suddenly he's really helpful and sweet and like playing on the same team and turning again.
And stays that way.
It's weird.
Yeah.
So it's implied that, like, there were two Tobins, but at what point did it change? And it was implied that when he touched the rock, he became creepy and ominous. But then what happened to undo that?
Right.
I didn't love that, because how are we supposed to feel about these characters and why?
The inconsistencies. Yeah. And like, yeah, the things that, you know, the redeeming qualities for some of these characters weren't necessarily fleshed out super well. You know, Travis is supposed to be a piece of shit.
He was an angel, though.
Baby daddy. But he was arguably, like, I thought, the most redeemable character.
I thought so, too.
The story.
Yeah. I think when we said that that Becky was the only person that got something out of this after having come out of the field. Like, I think Travis went into the field with, like, wanting to redeem himself. Like, he didn't need to have that experience. He went there with good intentions to, like, make it right and find them. And I don't know.
Right, because theoretically, he had abandoned her and the kid and was seeking to find her and to help and, I guess, make some amends for having done that before the baby was born.
Because it turns out they had been missing for 2 months. Travis said that they had left 2 months prior to make their journey to San Francisco. And in Cal and Becky's mind, they had only been gone for 2 days. So, like, that's one of the first times that we get this nod toward, okay, there's a time loop here. Something's happening. Would you guys agree with that? That was the kind of first time?
I would say it was after you see Becky's corpse and then Becky and Cal show up again.
But that definitely, what you just said, I certainly adds more context to, okay, exactly how warped is their sense of time while they're in the grass.
And also, like, how many loops did they have between that point and when Travis finally showed up, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because there's clearly so many loops that we haven't seen based on all of the bodies.
Yeah.
Right. Right. So I think it's implied that Ross, that
Daddy.
Daddy Patrick Wilson. I think it's
Tobin's daddy.
Tobin's
daddy. Yuck. I think it's implied that he has tried to bring people to the rock, namely his wife and son, several times, ended up dying. And then gone, well, fuck, I can just start over and try again, right? Like, that was the reason for all of the corpses being there, because he had tried and failed and started over again.
Yeah.
I think that's implied. It didn't read super clear.
No.
I'm still mystified by what the function of the rock was. It seemed to hold some powers that were not evil, but also evil Patrick Wilson wants everybody to touch it.
Right.
Yeah. Like, maybe it brings out your innermost whatever is most strongly driving you. Like Patrick Wilson's character was clearly kind of narcissistic and like an egomaniac. And like, he made a couple of comments even before I think we knew he was a bad guy about like his family pissing him off and his kids just like, I could have been doing all this if it wasn't for this kid and this wife. And you're like, bro, that's fucked up.
Yeah. Oh, once again, this is the frustration of why didn't the story flesh this out more? But I love this idea that it just like brings out your innermost self, showing how Tobin really is just this pure soul. And then someone like Travis, who, I mean, whatever, we're in the spoiler room. He ends up choosing to stay in the tall grass and kind of become like a protector. And that's like the role. He's the protector. So in a way, he is like a father figure.
Yeah.
Because he takes on this role of protector. And maybe that was his like true self finally coming out.
Okay, but there's two Travises. So there's a Travis that stays in the tall grass, and there's a Travis that gets to make things right with Becky.
Really? I did not get that.
I didn't read that. I thought that like she just had to go on without him.
Is that like in the book, or are we just dumb and we didn't get it out of the movie?
Okay, let's pause for a minute because this is the shit I'm talking about. Like, I almost felt more confused after reading some of this. So
this is Reddit stuff?
Yeah, this is Reddit stuff. Okay. So we'll take this with a grain of salt and we can cut all this, like, but I just want to talk about it. If there's two Tobins, there are probably two Travises at the end. Also, notice that the brother enters the grass with his glasses at the end now when he didn't the first time. There's multiple timelines, okay?
Oh.
That I did notice because he draws attention to the fact that he doesn't have his glasses the first time. Yeah. And when he went back in, I was actually paying attention for that.
I didn't even realize that he had his glasses on the second time. Yeah. Or the
I didn't either until I had read this. Okay, somebody said yes because Becky and Cal turned back. He waited 2 months before following them. It took them 2 days to drive that far out. So they'll be back home in 2 days.
So there's got to be, a version of him.
Correct. That they never, Travis will never have had a reason to go look for them. By saving them, he redeemed himself. Wow. It's a better story than the one they told. Okay, so if there's two Travises, one that stays in the tall grass and one that never had to leave in the first place, because Becky and Cal turned back. So if Travis waited 2 months before following them and it only took them 2 days to drive that far, they would be back home in 2 days. So I think that there is a timeline where Travis never has to go and save them, thereby redeeming himself, right? We're talking about redemption. And he gets to reconnect with Becky and make things right with her. What do you guys think about that?
And so there, okay, by this theory, there is some version of Travis that is like stuck in the grass forever, question mark?
According to this theory.
Yeah. Huh.
Because by the time they would have gotten out, one, they wouldn't have survived for 2 months in the tall grass.
Right.
You know, so they would have gotten out before he would have left to try and come find them. So presumably, yeah, there is still, he's somewhere back home.
Huh.
And I like that idea. I like that idea because, right?
I do too.
The end of this movie when Becky's like, you know what? I have a family to take care of. I'm not going to worry about that family in the grass. I have my own. It's implied that she goes back and like, you know, keeps the baby, Cal's her family, even though he's weird and Freudian.
And maybe like that version of her, even though she knows that there's a Travis in the grass, she goes and finds that universe as that time loops Travis as well. And maybe it changes her thoughts on him because of everything she experienced with him trying to protect her in the grass.
I mean,
who knows?
I like the story we're telling right now, and I think it's a better story.
It's a better story.
Yeah.
Isn't this a Chris thing, Patrick, where if you could rewrite this?
Chris rewrites the movie. Yeah. Allison's rewrite the movie.
I love it.
Rewrites the movie.
Reddit rewrites the movie, yeah.
Yeah. Huh. Wait, so there are actually canonically two Tobins?
I think that there are two Tobins. I think that there's a Tobin that never goes in the grass. Ever. And I think that there's a Tobin that goes in the grass and tries to warn people or tries to, I guess, lure people in. Still, does that Tobin still exist? I don't know.
Well, I mean, the actual ending of the movie, we might as well get to spoiling that, is the beginning of the movie, time loops again, and we have Becky and Cal pulling up in their car next to the tall grass. They hear Tobin. Oh, well, yeah. Because there's a Tobin or some voice that sounds like Tobin in the grass yelling for help.
Right.
And then another Tobin. Comes out of the church. Or something is impersonating him in the grass. I don't know. But yeah, he comes out and says, like, don't fucking go in there.
Yeah.
And he proves that he knows what he's talking about because he has this little necklace that.
He has Becky's necklace.
Yeah, oh, that's
that
right.
Heard a few times in the movie. And they're like, oh, okay, kid, this is weird, but I guess you know what you're talking about. And they, he gets in the car with them and they drive off together.
Poor traumatized Tobin.
Poor Tobin, yeah.
Because at one point he watches Patrick Wilson, like, kill his mom.
Yeah.
Like, by smashing her head in, which is horrifying.
Mm-hmm.
So there is something we haven't talked about, and I think that I read something on Reddit and I laughed out loud, but this whole concept of dead things don't move. So remember that the dead dog, and then as more people die, the dead people act as landmarks to get around the tall grass because dead things don't move. But somebody made a hilarious observation on Reddit that were like, as soon as Tobin said that the field doesn't move dead things, I was immediately thinking, why doesn't someone pick up the dead dog and walk out?
Literally, I was thinking about that too. I was like, why don't you find a corpse and drag it out with you?
Game over. Guys, we figured it out.
Right.
Stephen King and Joe Hill, if you're listening, we need some clarity on this.
Seriously. The dog definitely dies in this movie, and you see it quite gruesomely. Like, its corpse is fucked up. So if you don't like seeing dead animals, don't watch this.
Yeah, that was really graphic.
Yeah,
the dog is already dead when you see him, but it's graphic.
Yeah, you don't see it killed, but
yeah,
it's graphic depiction of its corpse.
Yeah.
And what happens, I mean, Patrick Wilson gets killed, right? I don't know.
I don't even remember.
Travis kills him.
I just got irritated, and I kind of started checking out at a certain point in this.
It was too clunky, way too clunky, and not spelled out.
Yeah, the ending, particularly I think like the back third of it was there was just, or maybe like back 40 minutes, whatever, it really kind of lost me. Mm-hmm. I thought there was an interesting enough setup, but they tried to do too much, I think, within that last kind of section.
Yeah.
And they fit a lot in there, and I don't think it was super, super clear.
No.
A lot of people compared this to Children of the Corn, which I have not seen that movie in so long. So I can't say.
Yeah, I don't know if I've ever seen that or read the book.
I haven't read the book either. So
that's a blind spot for me.
Yeah, same. So one thing I will say that's slightly different in the book is at the end, some hippies stop in the church's parking lot to have a cookout. And they hear Tobin screaming for help. And one by one, they walk into the tall grass.
So the cycle continues.
So, yeah, Tobin is still there. There is still some version of Tobin there that sucks.
I hate that.
Is there any more clarity in the book or honestly, even any Redditor theories that you read that kind of flesh out what's going on with the church? Because we learn some stuff about The Rock. We don't learn shit about the church in the movie. The church, like I said earlier, is basically just set dressing. And it is cool set dressing. The stained glass windows are gorgeous, and I want them in my home. But there's, I don't know. It just is so odd. It feels built up like it's going to be significant, and then it just isn't.
Right. I think it's, to me, I mean, yeah, I don't know what other people's theories are, but I wonder if like the entire congregation had sacrificed themselves, you know, to the tall grass.
Mm-hmm. That's a great story. Like, that is not dressed up in the movie or in the book.
No one.
The church is also a set piece. It's so strange because it has so much potential.
Right. Mm-hmm. And like then there's those the grass people that we see at one point.
Oh yeah,
with like the
that was cool.
Those were I love the creature design.
Well, yeah, and that's where I go back to like Natale and his visual sense. Awesome.
That's where I saw
big him. Hannibal. Energy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then there's like this where it's the big scene with Patrick Wilson gathering everybody by the rock, and then Becky starts to give birth. Mm-hmm. And the grass people come out, and the ground opens up, and there's all these writhing, wriggling,
mud
like
people,
dirt covered bodies.
Yeah.
And then you see the baby in utero, and there's all these like grass blades like going up and surrounding the baby. And I'm just like, what was that all for?
Yeah.
Like, is the baby being sacrificed to the rock?
Right. Or is the baby becoming part of, is the grass infecting the baby? Like, it was so interesting in the moment. And I was like, oh, this will be cool. And then it's just like,
yeah,
bye.
It's a compelling, no more. It's a compelling visual that introduces compelling ideas. And then it's just not explained again in a way that's not satisfying or thought provoking. It's just not there.
So there's a theory, if I may.
Mm-hmm. Yes, please.
Oh, yeah. This all started because I asked if you knew anything else about the church.
No, unfortunately. But there is a theory about the birth. So to quote this Redditor, I think the whole thing with the pregnancy and the birth hallucination is Becky remembering multiple timelines, but also hallucinating at the same time. The grass entering her and filling her body is a metaphor for the idea that it requires a human connection at all times. So in a way, the engravings and such are a red herring. I don't know that I agree or disagree with that, but I do like the idea, and I kind of sign on with the idea that the rock needs someone connected to it at all times, because we saw that kind of play out, right? Like,
yeah.
Like the motivation of the rock seems to be get someone to come touch you and then consume them, right? And then they become part of this, like, crazy timeline, but like
sorry, I'm just laughing because I love the ludicrous concept that we're discussing the motivations of our rock.
There.
We're writing a better story. I don't know how many times I can say this.
Yeah.
But the birth scene was weird, and I guess we should probably talk about, you know, the fate of all of that, because it was the most gruesome part of the whole book and then the movie. So Becky delivers the baby, but she's not in a good place physically. She's exhausted. She's dehydrated. she has this, is she hallucinating delivering the baby? We don't know. But a couple frames later, Cal is back with her and has found her finally and is feeding her. And she's eating. She's ravenously hungry.
Oh, God, I forgot about this part.
And it turns out he's feeding her her baby.
That was a fever dream.
Fucked up. I remembered that one scene from, I think, the first time watching this movie in 2019. Obviously, I remembered it in the book. The book was slightly different. It was an uncle, not a brother. So there was that.
Mm, ooh.
But everything that worse.
Makes it creepier. Yeah.
Nothing worse than an uncle. Ew.
Yeah. The creepy uncle trope.
But yeah, I mean, we don't know if the baby was stillborn, if the baby was murdered, if it was given to the rock as sacrifice, but she's fucking eating it.
That's so gross.
So there's that.
Yeah, and then it all gets, like, undone again another moment later.
Yeah, because then another loop starts.
Yeah.
Stupid.
Sorry to all the listeners. We've been all over the place with the timeline of
but
this.
The timeline is all over the place.
But also the timeline is all over the place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I said earlier, I was just overwhelmed at a certain point.
Yeah.
And just gave up trying to make sense of it. And I'm glad to hear that apparently both of you and the Reddit community were similarly bewildered.
Mm. I mean, that being said, I am like, I'm enjoying like speculating on what things like could have meant and could have been.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably why I gave it a cue in part was because like it did have me thinking about various things. And I'm frustrated that I don't, and I will never have answers about it. It is kind of fun to think like, well, what was the point of this? Like, what was this supposed to mean? What was this supposed to represent?
It introduces interesting ideas because, I mean, even, you know, Stephen King functioning at his lowest still has an insane imagination. Mm-hmm. And certainly I'll give this credit for having some incredibly imaginative ideas in it. They just don't come together as a narrative.
Yeah.
Yeah, it felt like one of those things that, again, Stephen King lovers understand that, like, sometimes you just get a shitty ending. Sometimes you just get a flop. And this man puts out, what, 10 books a year? So one or two of them, 33% of them are potentially not going to be great. And I don't know why Netflix picked this up to make a movie out of. I wouldn't have.
Yeah.
Interesting choice out of all of the available material.
Yeah.
All right, well, now that we've found our way out of the tall grass, what are we going to be discussing next time?
It's horror catch-up time.
It's horror catch-up time next week.
It's our monthly time to check in and talk about all the horror that we've been watching and listening to and reading and experiencing in the real world for the past month.
Where do we begin?
That's too much if we're talking about the real world.
Yeah, we're going to need a few episodes.
Yeah, let's leave out the real world.
We're going to need some therapy for that one.
Yeah, next time we'll bring in a licensed therapist to talk about all of the things going on in the world.
Oh, that sounds great, honestly.
That make fictional horror feel like a walk in the park.
Yeah.
Well, until then, we will again encourage you to check out every horror movie on Netflix.com. Follow us on social media at Amoncast, EHMONcast on Facebook, Instagram, Blue Sky, and TikTok at Amon Podcast, EHMON Podcast. And also join our Discord community. There's a link to that in the show notes. And again, leave us a review. But as we've established, we're fragile people. So you can only build us up. Mm-hmm. Don't be honest with us. Only say nice things.
Yep.
We can't take it.
Exactly.
Thanks for joining us for every horror movie on Netflix. I am Allison with an I.
I'm Allison with a Y.
And I'm Patrick.
See you next time.